Remember when scooters were coming?
Yeah.
You were kind of like, some of them were stifled to enter, but you're like, well, maybe it's better because people won't get run over in the street and stuff like that. So I think it's always this sort of like hybrid approach, and good regulators will listen to the entrepreneurs and come up with something that works.
Absolutely, as long as the regulator is proactive, so it's not no full stop, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's what's the path and what's the what needs to be there. Yeah. And for scooters, for example, maybe what needed to be there is tracks, right? Is the correct way to where you're allowed to use them, where you're not allowed to use them. If you didn't have that before, you didn't just want them all over the street and on the highways.
Take a walk on the Dubai Marina and let me know if you're happy about scooters being introduced.
I take them all the time on the other side of this argument.
Oh no.
Pro and par scooters. I prefer bikes.
I prefer just going for a walk. Whatever happens. Good morning and welcome to another episode of Smashy Business.
Three of us today.
Three of us. Donald Trump is selling God Bless America, God Bless the USA Bibles for $60 each as his social platform Truth went public as well. TikTokers are apparently more effective than celebrities, according to Egyptian business tycoon Mohammed Nagat. Telegram's premium subscription may cost more than your entire phone bill. What does that mean? Find out next. America's electric car maker Lucid looks to Saudi for funding. And then Estonia's Bolt takes on Uber in Egypt, slashing prices by 50% and helping drivers as well.
Fascinating.
Fascinating stuff. We're bringing our new slogan, the news behind the headlines.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
We just came up with it while the conversation.
Where are the headlines these days on social media? But Willie, just before the show, you were kind of mentioning that everything's back.
Yeah.
Because we talked about, you know, Reddit's IPO, Truth Social did a SPAC. Like, SPACs were hot maybe like 2020, 2021.
Right. We never thought we'd hear about SPACs again. They were, you know, an instrument that really fell out of favor in terms of taking companies public, and most people never expected to hear that word again, and yet here we are, and we're having successful companies or successful listings via SPAC again. So deja vu.
I think if the stock market in 2023 did, like, overall stocks were up, like, you know, but they didn't reach their all-time highs again. That's sort of like April 2020, end of 2020, you know, the listed companies were at their all-time highs, and then the graphs are like down, but they're kind of on their way back up. And you mentioned Bitcoin's up, everything's up this year.
Yep, as including meme stocks, right? Including those very retail-heavy, speculative names, they're back, and we're seeing people, you know, the demand on Reddit, for example, and its IPO is an indicator of that. And some would say Reddit would be the original meme stock, because most meme stocks, people sort of talked about them on Reddit.
There's so Solana is a blockchain that's doing really well at the moment, and there's a headline here: Solana meme coin craze continues. Biden parody token reaching $250 million markup.
Wow.
So you're right, everything's back. Everything's like, all the back. Meme coins are back. But you know what's not back yet? NFTs aren't back. Do you think they can have a comeback?
Interesting. I had an interesting debate about that a few months ago. I mean, if you follow the and track what's happening, then yes, I guess. if it's been a laggard, then I expect people to start piling back in again. I personally never got it, but that never stopped other people.
Yeah.
I never got it either.
I got it and wasted a bit of money on them. But you know what's funny about it is that I never sold assets. And this is interesting about the SPAC thing, that the special purpose vehicle, the entity that purchased or that took reverse merger Truth Social, didn't go away. So that funds was there. It's like private capital sitting waiting to be deployed, or a fund waiting to be deployed.
Correct.
So there were SPACs who raised some money, and they're looking for a vehicle to merge with and then change the name on the market. And the ticker for this Truth Social is DJ Trump, Donald J. Trump.
Junior.
Yeah. So, yeah, but the ticker is those three letters. It's not Truth. Like, if you look on the stock market and the NASDAQ, DJT. DJT is what Truth Social trades under, right? Vanity, right? Typical,
right.
You know?
Right.
But it went public, it raised, it bumped up, he got a couple of billion out of it that he probably won't use for the engineering and the features of Truth Social. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. It's interesting, though. This, you gotta love and hate Trump at the same time, right? So he.
It's always good for news.
Always good for news. Always entertaining, and I mean. You know, okay, I'm going to talk about this, then I'm going to talk about could this be another parallel of Elon Musk on X and Donald Trump on Truth? Because he's always entertaining. Elon Musk is always in the news. Donald Trump as well. Could that be, you know, the same type of situation? But he released a video on Truth urging his supporters to buy the God Bless the USA Bible. Inspired by a country song, basically. He took to the stage at one of his rallies. He said, "Happy Holy Week. Let's make America pray again."
Well, he's nothing if not a salesman.
Exactly. He's selling it at not $60, actually, $59.99. It's great. It's you gotta love Trump.
Is it is he funding his campaign selling Bibles? Do you think, or is this straight to the bottom line for him?
Well, I think whoever can understand Trump's finances, his taxes, I would say it's all messy. Who knows where the money goes and where it comes from? But you're right. Like, I think that's a good description. He's a salesman, and we saw a headline a month ago that he was selling gold high tops for thousands of dollars.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I wonder how many sold. Actually, I wonder if those numbers will ever come out. Probably not. And it's ironic that he used to be on The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the show, The Apprentice.
Yeah.
Mentoring other people.
You mentioned Trump and Musk together.
Yeah.
I think I bought Musk released this product, like a burnt hair. It called it burnt hair, and it was a perfume. And he released it online, and it said it was going to ship in Q1 last year. And we all, like, people who paid for it went viral. Like, he sold loads for funds, and it never shipped, you know? We can't
really?
Hold it accountable. Yeah, because, like, it's not even a company. It's messy distribution logistics. He never produced it. It's just meme stuff, you know? Who are we going to call to complain about it? But I just wanted to bring something.
Did you buy a perfume called Burnt Hair?
Yeah. Sometimes I justify these purchases as, like, as part of internet.
We need to talk about
internet. Yeah. That's meme cultures, but I wasn't ever going to use it. It was just something that I just.
It's okay. We're not judging you. We're not judging
waste
you.
Waste money. I have these bad moments I shouldn't mention on shows. But you know, so the Truth Social thing and Telegram, which we'll talk about, like, it's we're in an election year, and privacy and social networks and influence is going to be an American election. But we're in many countries here, but it always comes up, right? There's a podcast on Decoder with Nilay Patel, with the CEO of Blue Sky. So Blue Sky is one of these new social networks. Jay Gaber is the CEO. Blue Sky came out of Twitter. It's a federation. It's supposed to be decentralized social networks. Jack Dorsey always wanted to do it. And there's three or four of them that are trying to crack this. What's the other one called? The famous one. But anyway, like these ones, they've only 5 million users, but they're trying to be decentralized social networks.
Okay,
Discord is the one that you're thinking about? No.
What's it called? People will know this. I'll find it. Keep going, yeah.
Okay, well, speaking of social apps, TikTokers are apparently more effective than celebrities. According to Egyptian tycoon Hamad Nagati, he said Umm Khalid, for example, who has 4.8 million followers, regular mom, posts videos of her making food, preparing food with her kid, and she goes viral and she's doing really well. And he said that he had a discussion on LinkedIn and He's done a lot in the tech space. He used to work with Kareem. He's a guy who really made it from the bottom. Like, he came from nothing. He's really successful now, very well respected. And he said these influencers are definitely more effective than celebrities, is what he's saying.
I couldn't agree more. They are extremely effective in carrying a message. Certainly the most engaging social media out there. Mm. And I think we were talking previously about even how the policy within TikTok in attracting that sort of content and leveraging is quite unique. I can say from my own experience in Keeper is that
I was going to ask you about that. Would you use a TikToker?
I couldn't agree more. I mean, it was obvious to us when a well-followed influencer caught a story related to us and posted about it on TikTok. All our engagements went through the roof. We don't even have a TikTok, right? We've not established the TikTok sort of strategy at all to date in our go-to-market and our marketing strategy. But imagine just one single post for us actually tripled all our main indicators in terms of website traffic, in terms of applications. So it's I've never seen anything as effective and spread as fast as a message on TikTok by a very well-followed creator.
I watched the video this morning, and it was a creator in her car talking. I think we put the link in the show notes, and it looks like she's having like a moment in the car, right? So if you can see this.
So let me get this straight. You guys are telling me that when you're out of the house for hours, you're comfortable walking around with all that stanky body odor that's been building up on you all day?
Looks real, right?
It's even crazy. Yeah. They are antibacterial and actually lift and remove sweat, dirt, and odors, making these the one and only Total Refresh Shower on the Go solution.
Okay, so
this is AI?
And an ad, yes.
What?
Yeah.
This
fully
is AI.
Fully AI.
Oh, that person is not real.
That's not real.
That's
it's an
insane.
Ad. It's insane.
That's insane.
It's so scary.
It's a little
That's
bit shocking.
Freaky.
I mean, we always knew it was going to happen, right?
Yeah.
But it's happening.
Yeah. Totally.
As we speak. And there's no way to distinguish, right?
Should it be happening? Jesus.
It's mental, right? But like, what's interesting, I like the fact that we cover this story in Egypt because it's kind of like, duh, like obviously, like why is the Egyptian market taking so long? Why is all the ad spend going on TV in Egypt or billboards and outdoor obviously spend on creators? And we were talking earlier about how TikTok are the only social network with an office on the ground in Egypt and in Lagos and other places. So they get it. Person who posted about it, he gets it, influencers get it, but then like, okay, cool, we get it, but look what's coming next.
You started to get used to the influencers, now it's AI influencers.
I recall that there was conversation though about tagging AI generated content as AI generated content, so that something like this wouldn't happen, so we wouldn't be caught.
I think there are about 50 apps that you can, when you leave the studio now, in 10 minutes you can have a video like that talking about Keeper with accent, tone, country, everything, and you can even clone voices, like, and you can just spit this out on all the platforms and put a few quid behind it,
and there's no barrier basically to that, to how much content you can generate and how hard you
and
push.
It's only
that.
Getting better.
Wonderful.
I mean, that's where the regulations are coming in, though, right?
Yeah.
I think this does need to be highly regulated.
And enforcement. I think regulators are still catching up with old problems rather than actually knowing how to deal with new ones. I think this is moving too fast for most regulators. you see the European regulators trying to take this on a little bit, but their approach is archaic, you know, in
we discussed this yesterday,
it's
not a fit for all.
They're not addressing what you're talking about necessarily, and what you're talking about is not even going to be in the next 6 months the big thing, right? In the next 6 months, things will change even faster, and that's the pace that they're going to have to keep up with. I think it's going to be self-regulated in some way before anybody is able to catch up in anything meaningful.
It's like living in a sci-fi movie or something.
We're at that pace now.
So this is the point, like if you're listening to this person in Egypt and you've got a million Egyptian pounds to spend on marketing, do you spend it on influencers on TikTok or do you spend it on AI? You know, do you put you know what I mean? Do you hire a social media practitioner who's able to figure out content strategies for AI and to churn out videos? Like, where do you put your budget? It's probably 50-50, or you know, you kind of should do both, I guess. I don't know.
You think creative the livelihoods of creatives is under threat from AI generated content?
I mean, it's the same thing with ChatGPT, though, right? A lot of people use ChatGPT like for to write articles and all that stuff, but it's still different when a journalist does it. It's still
for now.
You know what I mean? I'm not happy about this at all. At all.
I mean, it's what we all have to So, if you recall,
panic attack, yeah.
10 years ago, when people were talking about AI and what AI is going to be able to do, the last sort of segment that people worried about was the creative segment, right?
Yeah.
You always
yeah.
thought the AI was going to be really good at doing the repetitive stuff and doing, you know, the automations and sort of decision making and so on. And the crazy thing is when AI came up at this mass sort of scale that we're seeing adopted right now, the first thing it went after was the creative, right? Is writing, is journalism, like you said, is creating of images. And
they can't replace
that
us,
looks like
though.
Real people.
They can't replace us.
I don't
us.
Know, Lubna, I'm trying to get worried.
I refuse.
I think
to
the point is you have to embrace it. Like, you have to embrace it. I think it'll be a who knows where it's going, but there's going to be a bit of what's the word, like mixed things going on.
Yeah, that's going to be your next hire, is it?
Yeah, yeah, she kind of looks like you.
That's going to be the end of me.
Yeah.
Oh,
we could just replace
oh dear.
You.
Oh dear. Moving on, let's move on from this horrendous topic. Okay. Telegram's peer-to-peer SMS login feature poses significant privacy concerns. The premium feature the subscription might actually end up costing you more than your entire phone bill because of the number of SMSs. You could receive up to 50 OTP codes. And it gives users the option to hide their data or share their data. But, just the cost of the SMS, alone, has people worried, about this. Telegram advises users not to interact with individuals who receive OTP codes from their numbers, and they say that they're still working on some regulations. I mean, I just find this a little bit ironic, the privacy concerns when it comes to Telegram, because, Pavel Durov left Russia because of those concerns, right? He didn't want to share user data. And now, here we go, privacy concerns for Telegram. And they're making a lot of money. They have almost a billion users.
Are they profitable? Did we cover that before?
They're going to be profitable either this year or next year, okay. They said, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's the modern day wire, right? So I would assume that particular application is more related to corporate accounts, to official accounts that need to manage their traffic. But I'm not aware of where the privacy issues pop up. I think it's peer-to-peer. I think it's user-to-user privacy issues. If you're talking about OTPs, then it is probably sort of an attempt to fish out information on a per-account basis.
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
It's access to data. It says here, the core privacy issues arise from the possibility of strangers accessing your phone number for spam and fraud, even though the Telegram offers the option to hide user numbers.
Yeah.
Because I think, I don't think they're adding ads to the platform. So they're basically, they know that people want to reach people.
Yeah.
Like if we think media is moving into these messaging apps, so they're monetizing that feature. It's back in the day when Google added the people were searching for a term, you get your AdWords. Like the best ad is a native ad. So, there's SMS companies in Dubai, we all get spammed all the time, and that hasn't infiltrated the apps as much as it has our phone numbers.
Yeah.
But this is a situation where they're going, okay, cool. We'll give WhatsApp Business have it a bit as well, and there's third party API companies.
Yeah.
So, but
they implement or enforce a very, very tight policy though. WhatsApp, it's notoriously difficult to crack WhatsApp when it comes to these things. I guess Telegram may have a slightly more lenient.
Yeah. It's fascinating. It's great for us to be able to discuss Telegram in Dubai because, as you said, he moved out of Russia. Most companies who stay in Russian internet end up becoming part of the state, like Yandex and others.
Yeah.
VK,
Facebook,
VK before. This is the Facebook of
Russia.
Yeah. And it was his company, he was the founder, and actually he let go because it was effectively taken control by the state.
I mean, he let go and made money, so
he's no victim, and he's probably the right person to be running it as opposed to say Trump and Truth Social. Like, you know, if they raise money, he's going to put engineers behind this and it's going to be as good as WhatsApp, whereas if money goes into Truth Social, who knows what.
I feel like Truth Social is like the Fox as a social platform.
Yeah.
Fox News.
There's a couple of them.
Yeah,
but the company I was uh, the social network I was trying to think of earlier is called Mastodon. So there's a few of these ones. You've heard of it, yeah? So like there's a few of these ones like Blue Sky and Mastodon who just believe in decentralized, a bit like the blockchain crypto.
It's coming from the same mindset. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, let's move on to, actually, hold on. Do you guys use Telegram? I'm curious.
I do, yes.
I don't. And I wish I did. There's one person, there's a couple of people who I message on Signal, and I'm like, will you please move over to Telegram? Because I'll message you every day. I want to use Telegram, and I want our platforms to distribute our content on Telegram, but we're a bit slow at it. But we need to. You get your news on it or just message people?
Mainly news, no. It's not a communication tool that I use, but it's mainly a feed, effectively.
Why? Because you can't get your news elsewhere? Or?
Because it's a great source of news. Because I look at it as the new, the modern wire, right? Mm-hmm. So if you can subscribe to a few wires and you get news coming from sources on topics that you're interested in coming from their origin.
Yeah. We need to get on it.
Nice. Yeah, we do. We do.
And it's instant. It's the quickest updates. I mean, obviously, it's as instant as X or Twitter or any of these other platforms, but it tends to be a little bit more inclusive, Telegram, so you don't have the limitation issues that you're witnessing right now on Meta, for example, platforms and so on.
Yeah, absolutely. All the RT guys as well use Telegram. Anytime that I want to connect with them, they refuse to use WhatsApp, and they make it a point to use Telegram instead. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Right, Lucid, the American electric car maker, is looking to raise $1 billion from Saudi's PIF affiliate. So it's been Saudi backed for years. It has an office in Saudi. I love that the Americans are looking to the Middle East, to the GCC for money in so many areas.
It's usually when things get tight back home, you know, you look for money elsewhere. And well, we're saying everything is back. Not everything is back. EV is not back. So Tesla was one of the original meme stocks, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody piled into Tesla and nobody understood how this company became a $1 trillion company. You know, it makes cars. How is it worth more than every other car maker on earth?
But their share price has been down, hasn't it?
Yes. And Tesla is just the the surface of it. It's the other EV makers that have had an even harder time coming through, getting their sales numbers right, shipping out product as quickly as they as they wanted to. So you take a look at the likes of Rivian and Lucid, and they've been having a tough time, a real tough time, numbers-wise, business-wise, but also their stocks have been struggling, and they're having a harder time, sourcing cash effectively.
Probably because of the wider trends, right? Like the time of winner takes all in the EV sector is over, that there's not going to be one winner, and all these legacy automotive companies are actually, their strategies are sort of feeding into all this as well.
I met the CEO, the regional CEO of Porsche just a few months back, and he said that the sales of the electric cars are doing really, really well. Like, they are hitting record numbers here in the region. So I think, ironically, maybe these legacy brands, as you were saying, they're going to be the winners in this, because they've got kind of the best of both worlds.
Porsche is a great example, of course, of people who jumped on very effectively into the EV space. But I think the dedicated EV makers are getting a squeeze from multiple sources. Probably the first source would be, that China now is in the game, and it's very, very much. It backed the EV sort of direction extensively. We all know that Tesla is no longer the largest producer of EVs in the world. It's a Chinese company called BYD, and then you have a long tail of other producers.
There's a lot of BYD cars in Egypt, actually. Not the EV ones, but the original,
really?
You see it everywhere.
It started off as a conventional car maker, but I think its claim to fame, obviously, right now is that. So they're getting squeezed from the cheaper supply coming in from China, and it's much better distributed in other markets these days. And then the flip side is the growth in EV in general, even though you mentioned it as brisk, it's not been as fast as some of the assumptions were by these companies. Yeah. And they've not been able to produce these cars as fast as they've needed to. So they've got the supply side squeeze, they've got the competition competition side squeeze. And then some get into the equation right now with like Toyota's EV strategy is not to build EVs, it's actually to build hybrids. And there's a great argument today that the hybrids is actually the way to go in the market because of, you know, consistent EV issues related to range and reliability and things like that. We've still not completely cracked. Mm. And then the infrastructure you need just to build the stations.
What's for sure is that the brands, the automotive brands that will be the dominant players will be different than when we grew up. Like it's a changing space, and Saudi's investment in Lucid is really interesting, right? They did it at PIF level. They bought some of it and then they backed it up by creating factories, and now there's more funding coming. But you kind of hope
that a majority shareholder, I think.
But you kind of hope it works for them, right? Because it's a huge investment and they didn't sort of buy into Tesla. They picked Lucid and maybe it was a safer-ish best than Rivian because that was a bit messy. But like you kind of, I really hope that manufacturing works in the region. Mm. And if it doesn't work with Lucid, that's some other, you know, we talk about China, right? Like why doesn't the region produce automotive vehicles at scale for the region? Why do we have to import everything? So if someone's investing in a factory, you kind of hope that the brand that they picked delivers.
Yeah.
But what we've seen with Tesla, like people kept writing it off for many years and it's on the streets, right? Like it's here, it's there to stay. But yeah, the whole winner takes all thing, I think, isn't going to happen in EVs.
Yeah.
But just talking a little bit about like EVs and kind of a segue into the story that you're going to mention about Bolt is last Ramadan I attended a beautiful Sahur in the pyramids with Uber, and the speech that they made talked about how many EVs they're going to have on the streets globally. Mm. And I asked the guy afterwards, we were having something, and I said, he was like, I'm not worried about hitting the quota in the UAE because they've committed to it overall of vehicles on the road. So UAE is not my problem. And they always, like they're behind now, but they Dubai and everyone, they always hit their numbers faster. So those number of like of cars on the road by 2030, there's the number that Dubai has committed to. They're just going to hit it and he's not worried about it, you know? So that's just interesting, like that there are quotas that Uber have committed to it as well. Mm. So Uber, you know, we think of, they're obviously, they don't make cars, but if everyone is moving in this direction, it helps it.
Then, and it's for them, it's adoption. They're obviously, they don't own the fleets, but they control, you know, the biggest fleets in the Middle East when it comes to taxis, obviously. So their adoption of EVs can move the needle.
Yeah.
This is just interesting. I remembered, because you were talking about Uber, and I remembered I wrote this opinion piece for Arabian Business in 2019. It was, why Mohammed Labbad is about to take Uber for a ride. So he had partnered with China's Didi. He wanted to bring it to give Western competitors a run for their money, basically. It was interesting because where is Didi now? It's not here.
Never showed up.
It never showed up. I think Yandex has plans.
Yango's already here.
Yango. And Yandex as well.
Same company, different name. Yeah.
They rebranded for here. Yandex into Yango.
Really? Yeah, I didn't know that. But that's
they've gone very aggressive on the UAE, and it's not just
that's not very smart, is it? Because all the Russian consumers know it as Yandex.
I think they kind of wanted to, because the ownership structure, they wanted to be independent. So they want,
correct. Okay. So there's the background story over there is that the Russian assets of Yandex have been sold, or at the agreement to sell the Russian assets, because it's a NASDAQ listed company that was ceased from trading a few years ago when the Russia-Ukraine war popped up, and they want to bring it back to life, and they want to operate in markets that they were no longer able to operate in. So this is part of a slight rebrand strategy, and they doubled down on the UAE. Yango is very present now over here.
In many different verticals. So Yango Maps, verticals. Yango Play is a streaming service like Netflix and Amazon Prime. They have Arabic content.
And the way I assess that they are getting traction is from my kids.
Okay. Really?
So my kids are interested in that super app that they've created for entertainment, which merges gaming and streaming and content and you name it.
They even have a competitor from a publisher, from a media point of view, for SSP, for ads, that competes with Google. So they've got really good tech, And they are aggressive here.
They are quite aggressive.
Nice. I don't agree with the rebrands, because I really like Yandex and I use it whenever I go to Moscow. So I don't know about the rebrand. Like, was it really necessary? I don't.
Do a story on it, figure it out.
I think that's worth digging deeper.
Agreed. Let's just say that,
Okay, cool. Vault is launching in Egypt. It slashed prices by 50%, challenging Uber. It's an Estonian company. So that's pretty cool to see, I think. It entered Tunisia in 2019, wants to disrupt the market. It's trying to help drivers as well. So it waived the standard 15% driver commission, significantly lower than Uber and Careem's 22 to 33%, offers riders the discount on a 50% discount on trips for the next 6 months. It's absorbing the discount cost themselves, ensuring drivers receive the full fare for each ride. That's nice. You know, I really like Careem, for example, but which is, you know, there's Uber, Careem, and now Bolt in Egypt. But, you know, there are all of these ads that Careem have gone under fire for, like, you know, if you don't get your order in X amount of minutes, you know, you get the money back. And it's like, who suffers, the driver or, and, you know, it's not really safe for you to be putting out these ads for the drivers to be going even faster than they already go. So this seems like a healthier company. I wonder what the future is for Bolt.
It's certainly one way to capture market share, and Bolt's got great experience doing that. It's a very interesting company. Like you said, out of Estonia, not the usual source, you know.
But a fascinating place for tech startups. The highest per capita in Europe, tech startups come out of Tallinn, Estonia. Yeah. And
the assumption is they're not there to serve Estonia. Right, these are companies that are going global, coming out of such a small but
amazing
ecosystem,
and picking Tunisia and Egypt, not Dubai and Saudi.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Like, and this is the thing about emerging markets with high population: the promise of swivel as well, and people need transport to get around Egypt. So yeah,
and I think that's always been in their strategy. They went after emerging markets rather than the usual suspects, Bolt, and that's their claim to fame. They seem to understand populous, maybe lower mid-income countries, emerging countries, better.
You know the one that got the exit out of here, Kavak Karasti?
Yes,
the Mexican, that's sort of looking at the automotive selling process. And they also had the same, that's why they bought them here, because they didn't want to go to Europe and US. They did an emerging market strategy as well.
In Oman, actually, the company was mainly operating out of Oman. So another interesting choice where, you know, you target emerging markets that maybe the big boys aren't as focused on, or you can have better economics.
I mean, Abu Dhabi is doing that as well, though. They're targeting Serbia, Albania. Hamad Labar also just, I think 2 years ago, was making the rounds all across Eastern Europe. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the biggest arms factory for the UAE is in Serbia, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a very, very strong actual connections with Serbia and the whole region over there, from a infrastructure development, from lending, from real estate investment side. It's been ongoing actually for a number of years, and it makes sense. It makes sense to focus, you know, on specific areas where other people aren't looking, and you know, have significant economic interests and influence.
Absolutely.
And it's quite cool as well to see these brands emerge. You know, before in the past you have couple of names that are global, like Uber or whatever, but now there's more people entering, and they're not coming from the usual suspects of Silicon Valley. Like, if you listen to US media, you would think that DoorDash or Lyft are global brands, but they're not. We're getting some, like, out of different countries. It's quite cool.
You know who's in town as well is the guy who bought, Anton Pinsky is his name. He's the guy that bought Starbucks' assets in Russia. Stars Coffee. He's in town. He's opened a restaurant called Luna. Or Luna, which means moon in Russian, and it's in downtown. He's in town, and he's been really busy, and I doubt it's just with that restaurant. So we were trying to get him on the show.
Interesting what plans he might have.
Yeah. Never know. We might see Stars Coffee where all those Ashaya Starbucks are. Who knows?
People need an alternative to Starbucks, right? So, right. On that note, thank you both for your time. I think we should make this a weekly thing, Richard, with Waleed.
Yeah, Wednesday. Thanks for coming in, Waleed. But just to finish, I know what the producer's saying to finish off, but like the Uber, how can we mention Uber in Egypt without talking about the trouble they're having with the lady who jumped out of the car?
Yes,
you know, because this is such a big story. She died from a coma.
Because she thought the driver was going to sexually harass her. Yeah.
If you we're talking about Telegram and privacy and things like that. Like it's not just social networks. Bolt and anyone in any tech space, even we lead with Keeper, you know, these are things that everyone in the tech space needs to think about in the future, you know.
Real world issues.
Airbnb bans cameras in their homes. Yep. Like these are all, if you have responsibility and you're taking on this space, like it doesn't escape you. You have to look at it. And it's such a tragic story what's happened there. And it's really terrible.
And he went back on the app, used another national ID, and he was back on the app. So now the authorities are looking into it. But it brings up that point that all of these companies do need to take accountability.
Totally. Yeah, there's regulation, but there's also like your own governance and your own responsibility.
Exactly, like Airbnb. That's crazy that people have been putting up these cameras. Makes you not want to ever take an Airbnb.
And then, like now, they ban them. I think in the private areas, but not in the
liberal. They weren't banned before. I think was surprising to many. Yes.
Yeah, it's fascinating.
Exactly.
But yeah, and you would hope that, I think when...
there weren't cameras in the Airbnb. Right?
But I think it's interesting, right, like with regulation, you know, sometimes we get frustrated as consumers that tech products and apps aren't here. And we think that it's because the regulators, like say in the transport sector, like the government, the semi-government and government entities are holding things back.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, some of them were stifled to enter, but you're like, well, maybe it's better because people won't get run over in the street and stuff like that. So I think it's always this sort of like hybrid approach, and good regulators will listen to the entrepreneurs and come up with something that works.
Absolutely, as long as the regulator is proactive. So it's not a no full stop, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's what's the path and what's the what needs to be there. Yeah. And for scooters, for example, maybe what needed to be there is tracks, right? Is the correct way to where you're allowed to use them, where you're not allowed to use them. If you didn't have that before, you didn't just want them all over the street and on highways.
Yeah, exactly.
Take a walk on the Dubai Marina and let me know if you're happy about scooters being introduced.
I take them all the time on the other side of this argument.
Oh no.
Pro and fire scooters. I prefer bikes.
I prefer just going for a walk. Whatever happens.
All right, guys.
Thank you guys for your time. Tune in for another exciting episode tomorrow. We've got another co-host joining us. She's an economist. And tune in and get us wherever you get your podcasts. Support your local business in Ghami, or you can get it on Apple and Spotify. If you like the video version, smashy.tv, our streaming service. See you tomorrow.